Welcome to About Sex. This is Angela Skirtu, and joining me today is Joshua Skirtu.
Hi.
Today we have a lot of topics
I'm
to
Josh.
Cover. Hey, Josh. He's always making me laugh. So anyhow, the first topic we want to cover is actually how to talk to teens and kids actually about sex.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of thoughts on this topic.
Why should you talk to kids about sex and teens?
Why? That's a good question.
Teens don't have sex. Why would they need to talk about it?
You know, I think that's the hardest part for parents is actually thinking about your kid or your teen wanting to have sex. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, my daughter will never have sex.
I know. We have a daughter. She's almost two. And this is the thought of her ever wanting to have sex. It's like, no, you're not allowed to touch her. Nobody is.
Two.
But there will come a time when somebody's going to find her attractive and she's going to find somebody attractive.
Not if we make sure she's real ugly and wears frumpy clothes.
You're like, you're never allowed to look pretty.
Poor lady. She's gorgeous. I'm going to have to own a shotgun.
I know. It's so hard thinking about them having sex. So that's, I think the first step is just like, realize that it's going to happen whether you like it or not. And you've got to educate them so that they're safe. I think that's the other thing is that people don't realize how much of a safety issue it is.
I think that's the biggest problem when people are very like restrictive about sex with their kids. They're like, you're not allowed to have sex. If I find out you're having sex, you're grounded forever.
Guess
now,
what they do? They hide
now
it.
Now it's something that they have to hide because the reality is they are sexual people, even so far as having to hide masturbation.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. People are so weird about sex.
It's
but
just
when
your
they
body,
do that,
you know?
when they make you hide sex, it means you can't get help from them. And that means you
That's true.
As a kid, I didn't have access to any money. Barely any. So guess what I wasn't going to be able to do? Buy a condom. Wasn't going to happen.
Birth control. Well, and what if you are having sex with somebody you don't want to get pregnant?
I wouldn't have even known how to get birth control other than get condom. Come on.
Yeah, and even buying the condom, I mean, how awkward is that going up to the register when you're like, what, 15 and buying condoms?
Yeah.
I think in some places they won't sell them to teens either.
Vendors have the right to refuse service to anybody.
Which is,
and
even that's
do.
Dangerous. I mean, that's why we're having
some
teen pregnancies.
Smaller towns have one pharmacy and everybody knows everybody. So guess what? They don't buy condoms.
Yeah. Yep. And so that's why people need to talk to their teens about sex and their kids so that they don't have to hide that part of
so
their
how
lives.
How do you talk about it then?
Well, I mean, I think it's very age appropriate, right?
Yeah.
And so you,
so when they're three, what do you say?
Oh God. All you do when they're three is tell them about their body parts.
Yeah.
Identify what's what. Actually
Teach appropriate touch.
Like, it's okay for your doctor to touch you so long as your parent is present. It's okay for your parent to bathe you because obviously, I mean, they're not going to bathe themselves that well. They're pretty gross.
Right.
But if you can also tell them how to advocate for themselves, I actually recently had something like this happen where a parent was like, they were worried that their kid had maybe been molested and they're like, what do I need to do to talk to my kid about this?
Yeah.
And so, I told them to just teach them how to say no to somebody if somebody's trying to touch them, that's not a parent or a doctor, and what to say. Like you can say to your somebody, you'd say, hey kid, if somebody's trying to get you to touch them or do something inappropriate, you just say no. And then you go to an adult, you know, and that's one thing they can do to protect themselves.
Yep.
But if sex is an awkward issue, even if you as a parent are modeling this anxiety around sex, then even a little kid might be too scared to come up to you.
Because they'll think they're in trouble.
Yeah. They worry about
and
that.
And that actually happened to me.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Not going to say who it was, but somebody close to me had been molested. And I was a little bit older, I thought I would get in trouble if I told my parents because they were so weird about sex. And that's dangerous. Luckily, an older friend of ours knew what had happened and talked to my parents and talked to, or sorry, I just let that slide. But
that's fine. You said somebody you knew, whatever.
Somebody I knew.
It's hard.
It could have been anybody.
It could have been anybody, but the truth is that you do need to have a safe relationship with your parents so you can disclose, hey, something's feeling uncomfortable. I don't know if this is okay or not okay. And then over time, as they get older, then the conversation starts to change. Like, I think it's okay to talk to your kids about masturbating. Tell them where it's appropriate. Like, you can do that in your room or in the bathroom, but it's not okay to do it, like, in a grocery store.
I know.
Or in a church.
I knew a kid that would do that. He was a very special kid,
yeah.
And he would just whip it out in the middle of the grocery aisle, especially produce. I don't know what it was. Something about those yams.
They were very sexy.
I'm all about those yams.
Yeah, so you need to tell them what's appropriate. Like, it's okay for them to touch themselves. That's fine, as long as they're not hurting themselves or, like, attacking
anything. Here's my plan. When they're old enough, they're going to have a lock on their door.
Yeah.
They're going to know how to use it. I can always unlock it.
Yeah, we'll have a key if there's an emergency, of course.
Yeah, but no matter what, I'll make it clear. If you need to do that, you got to go to your room. Just close the door and say you need alone time. There you go. I was thinking about even making like those little things they have at the hotel that says do not disturb. So if they really need private time.
If this room's a rocking.
it just says do not disturb. Because,
yeah, I need some downtime. You know,
as
whatever.
An adult, I need it too. When our kids are older, I'm going to have one of those on our door.
Oh, absolutely. Because
I don't want them kicking down the door.
Well, this is something else that you could be talking about. Like, how do parents still have a sex life but then have kids? And what if, like, all parents talk to me and they're like, what if the kids walk in? I'm so freaked out. Here's the deal, parents. They are not going to be traumatized if they walk in on you having sex with each other.
No.
That doesn't mean...
No,
like,
it'll just be a funny story.
It'll
for
be
them
a
to
funny
tell.
Story. They will actually learn to avoid your room like the plague because nobody wants to walk in on their parents having sex.
I wouldn't say no one, but yeah, most people.
Nobody. Well, I'm just saying most people wouldn't. So, like, as they're teenagers, if ever they accidentally walk in, they will learn to never go to your door. So... that's one thing you can do, but just, I know some parents who will just say straight up to their kids, if this door is closed, you should expect us to be naked and having sex. Don't come in here.
Oh, that is exactly what I was, actually, my kids are not allowed in my room, like after hours, as nobody's there. Mm-hmm. And unless we bring them into our room, they're not allowed in there ever, really.
Well, I want them, that's another thing, is you want them to sleep in their own bed. If you have your kids sleeping in your bed, you're not going to have sex, ever.
It's really awkward.
No, you don't do it at all.
Well... We've had sex with the dog in the room.
Oh God.
And they watch, and I have to say that gets awkward, especially when we lock eyes, me and Bruno. And it's like, oh,
well, you
hello.
Have to show him who's dominant, right?
Oh yeah, you look him right in the eye and you go, "Yeah." I'll show you, Bruno.
He's like, "Are you hurting her?" No. He totally
no,
knows what's
our
going on.
Our dogs mostly just get annoyed.
They're like, "Will you stop shaking the bed? Boring."
Yeah, exactly.
But so anyhow, that's another thing you can talk to your kids about. Sex is just saying, "Hey, so you know, your mom and I do have sex. When that door is closed, please don't come in." And your kids are not going to be traumatized by knowing that you have sex. In fact, I think it's modeling a healthy relationship for kids to know that their parents have sex. They're like, oh, okay, that's a part of what it takes to have a healthy relationship. It doesn't mean you go into detail. You just say, stay the heck out of our room so that we can have some private time. But then if they have private time too, then everybody kind of gets what they need, it sounds like.
Okay. So how do you talk to them about sex?
Well, this is kind of how it grows. Like when they become
older.
Teens, then we need to talk to them about if they're interested in sex, how to set boundaries with a person, how to decide like what it is they
how
want.
How do you set boundaries?
Well, you actually, first of all, you need to kind of spend some time thinking about what you're comfortable doing with a partner. So say you've been with
like
a boyfriend
you like,
or a girlfriend.
You're okay with mini golf, maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe mini golf at first. Well, like you talk a little bit about what's out there. You can kiss, you can hold hands, you can cuddle. That's something that can happen.
You'll allow it.
Yeah, you'll allow it. And as parents, you can talk to them, you can get them thinking about what they're comfortable with and what they're not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But then when you set a boundary with your partner, you tell them that. You say, I think I'm okay with kissing right now. I don't feel like I want to go further than that.
Right.
Some parents,
but then they'll say, but come on. But not, I wanna.
That's not being a good partner. If you're
but that's called being a teenager.
Well, if you have that, you tell them both ways. You want to teach the kid also that it's important to be respectful of that boundary.
Yep.
That doesn't mean you can't ask for something and say, hey, I would love it if we could like do some feeling up or something. That's usually something heavy petting.
Boobies.
That's an old timey term, but it's relevant. Petting is something teens do. You might say, at some point, I would love it if we could do some heavy petting, but you still just respect the boundary.
Sure.
But ideally, you want to get your teens thinking about what they're comfortable with and then communicating to their partner what they're comfortable with so they're advocating for themselves right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of a kid who's never been taught to do that. Like, they may just be in the situation and then their partner does something and they feel kind of like, do I have to do this? Is this okay? Can I say no? What do I do?
Yeah.
Well, definitely. Those are just examples, you know? Yeah.
So what else?
Well, you wanted to talk a little bit about hygiene. Did you have some questions or thoughts about that? Because that's part of the sex talk too, right?
Well, yeah, that's the next topic.
Well, it's part of this talk, though.
No, it was the next topic, but whatever. I guess
we can cover it.
I guess we're moving to the next topic, everybody.
He loves my transitions.
Oh, your transitions are as smooth as superb. Oh, that's smooth.
I think it's part of the sex talk. I got to be honest, but
the
continue.
Whole show is about sex.
Oh, you, Josh.
So let's keep on this a little bit more about the teens. So you set boundaries.
Okay.
And then you teach them to respect other people's boundaries.
Absolutely.
Shouldn't you also teach them about outcomes?
What age
should you really teach them about outcomes of sex? It leads to things. Like, it's not just it's not a video game. It can make you pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It can. There are risks involved, such as STDs.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, there are emotional risks involved because sex is a very intimate thing. And if you jump into bed with somebody, you may regret it later.
I think that's a very reasonable question, actually. I mean, you should be teaching your kid to respect sex throughout.
What age do you think on that?
I think that you could be talking about consequences like all the way down at like 10 and 11. Because if you think about it, there are consequences even before some of those that you're talking about. Like the internet now makes it so that people can take pictures of themselves.
Oh.
And in middle school, kids were sending pictures, naked pictures of themselves that could be posted. And that's like,
child porn.
Child porn. They need to be aware that if they're taking pictures of themselves,
A photo of their own body.
Yeah, that's so interesting. But I mean, the reality is there's a whole new realm of sexuality that kids can experience just by having technology that we have. And so I think the consequences talk should be throughout.
I think that's a whole other topic. Talking about electronics,
electronics and sex.
When it comes to like that, like sexting and stuff. I think we should talk about that on the next show.
Well, we will. But even back to this teen stuff, I think it's always important to talk to teens about and kids about the next step, like whether it's sex or anything else. What would the consequence be of you making this decision? What do you think? Like, you ask a lot of open-ended questions.
Chocolate.
Yeah, like if you eat a lot of chocolate, what's a consequence of eating too much chocolate?
You ate
might
chocolate.
Get sick.
Yay, we're getting chocolate tonight.
Chocolate. Yeah, and as long as that conversation is always open, then you'll have plenty of conversations. And then sometimes maybe a news story will come up, or like a story. Nowadays, teachers are sending stories home for us to talk about with kids that you can start that conversation with as well.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that stuff, then like the consequences should be talking about the consequences straight from the beginning. And then it's just an easy topic to have overall. I don't know. When do you think is a good time to talk about it?
I agree.
what do you think should be talked about at the different ages? Because I mean, she's your kid too, you know.
When she's able to talk, I'm gonna teach her what safety, like, nobody's allowed to touch you at this age. You know, you need to, if somebody touches you, and then, you know, the genital areas or anything. I don't know what words we'll use.
Well, I think we should use the real words, vagina.
Oh,
but
100%.
You know.
But when anybody touched you there inappropriately, you need to tell us, or tell a teacher, or tell an adult that you can trust.
Mm-hmm. And it's important for her to never feel blamed.
At that age, that's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not that, I want to make sure, it's not that you're in trouble, it's that we want to make sure you're safe.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's always a safety
issue.
So
at that
age,
it's about safety. I think when they're a little older, like maybe 5 or 6, you teach them about the mechanics of it, you know, what actually comes from sex, you know, creating babies and how it works.
How their bodies will change. You got to give that conversation at some point.
That's like third grade, you know, kind of age.
Yeah, like you'll get pubic hair and you'll smell really bad.
I think I smell wonderful.
You smell like daisies.
But I do have pubic hair.
Oh my goodness. They smell so bad in middle school. Like, they just have terrible hygiene.
It's because nobody makes them bathe.
Oh, there was a kid in my school.
That's the weird thing. Like, like when I was real little, like, everybody's parent is on them about, like, you got to get in the shower, get in the bath. And when you're a teenager, people just stop caring. They're like, it's going to stink either way.
I knew this kid in my elementary school who was putting deodorant on his shirt, not on his underarmpit.
But I bet his shirt was silky smooth smelling, wasn't
it? His shirt smelled great. But that's the point. Like, they need to learn those things.
Yeah. Okay. So we actually went pretty long on that one. Let's move on to the hygiene topic.
Okay.
The topic we're talking about is ladies' hygiene. Let's say you're 12 years old. You're 11 years old. You haven't had your first period. Mm-hmm. And you're about to become a woman. So what does that little girl need to know about what's to come? Oh. About how she's going to have to... What's going to happen? Because what is going to happen, Angela? I don't know. Well, this is going to be a surprise for me. I'm looking forward. And what does she need to do to keep the hygiene positive down there? Keep it in a clean position, you know? Keep herself clean.
Well, she needs to know. She needs to know that she's going to bleed every month, every 28 days. You should tell them the other 28 days.
Why is she going to bleed? That seems so weird. Is somebody cutting her?
Her uterary lining is shedding. I think it's reasonable to actually, like, open up a
book. Because they're becoming a woman. They are able to have children at that point once they are fertile.
Yeah, I think that's a great time to open up a book and go over the different parts of the body and explain what's happening when their uterary lining is shedding and they're bleeding for a little bit. Yep. That doesn't mean they're going to die or they're in trouble or hurting.
It's like, my uterus is attacking me. There's something about it, Mom.
And it's important to tell them to bathe every day, sometimes twice a day if they feel really gross, because it does. It just feels gross. And I know sometimes people don't like talking about it.
Sometimes you just need to lay in a bath and fill it with salts and flowers. Is that a big part of the hygiene process? Is flowers and candles?
Yes, and this is something I didn't know when I was a kid, but we used to think that when you were in a bath, then you didn't have your period. But no, you're still having it. It's just dissolving into the water. Some kid told me that. She's like, oh, you don't bleed in water. It's just that, you know, you just don't understand.
It's just diluted.
It's just diluting. So no, you're bleeding for about 3, 4, 5, 7 days.
All these facts that you get from random third graders, they are priceless.
They're so smart. That was a third grader who gave me that advice. I was like, oh, okay. I don't have to wear a tampon in the pool. It's like,
you don't need to wear a helmet on a motorcycle. The motorcycle will be fine if you hit it.
That's another thing, is you have to teach them how to use a pad or a tampon. I think at an early age, there's a little sticker that you pull off and you put a pad on the underwear. And I think
you don't put the sticker on your vagina.
No. That's funny. That could happen. Right. Yeah. And I think it's perfectly normal to just use like a small pad when they're first starting, because a tampon is something kind of, I don't know. Like, I don't know when people really use tampons. I think I started as a teenager, because there does come a time where you want to do things like swim, or you want to, do things where you don't have to have the pad, and it kind of feels like a diaper for some people.
But if they
want to
use a tampon, is there a way they can kind of
lean to practice.
Into it, train for
There's
it?
There's a way to practice. And actually, my sister taught me this. Thanks. Oh. But so basically what you do is, when you're not on your period, you practice sitting in a tub. Because it's high pressure. When you're on your period, you kind of freaked out and you're worried because the blood's coming out.
You're
like, oh.
Practicing putting it in.
So you practice it when you're not on your period, and you lay in the bathtub. And first you have to put the tampon into the vagina, and then you push it. That's the other thing. So like when I was first trying it, I would try to put it just at the edge and push it through.
No,
you push the actual applicator all the way in to where your hands.
You can still hold on to it. You don't want to let go of it.
And then you squeeze it up into the vagina. And the other thing that people need to understand is the upper 2/3 of the vagina have no nerve endings. So it's not going to be painful once it's up there. Sometimes people are freaked out because they're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Will I feel it? You actually don't feel it once it's up there if it's done correctly. But if you do feel it, it's probably not up there correctly.
Yeah. Like maybe you put it in sideways.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of stuff going on in a vagina, let's be honest. There's like folds and flaps and
they do
skin.
Make entire people in there. So yeah, there's a lot going on in there.
There's
it's a pretty amazing place.
So you got to fiddle around to figure out what's comfortable.
Guys, we got nothing. We got
a penis.
We got a penis and it kind of dangles around a little bit.
Just
and that's
hangs
it.
Around.
You guys create life in there. And
we sure do. We do.
We help a little bit.
Your role is a little bit less than ours.
Yeah.
But so anyhow, that's kind of the hygiene that you need to learn. And once you've practiced it, then you can definitely get to that point where you can put a tampon in.
So our next topic, we're going to be talking about sex addiction. What do you want to talk about sex addiction? What about it?
Well, so there's some complications when it comes to sex addiction.
It gets complicated.
It always. Well, of course it's complicated, right?
What is sex addiction? Let's start with that.
Well, that's what I want to cover, actually, is that sex therapists actually have a little bit of debate of whether or not they think sex addiction is real or not. And the reason we have a debate is that Some of sex addiction, that framework comes from religious beliefs and values. Sure. And sex therapists aren't necessarily religious. I mean, that doesn't
some
mean
are,
we don't.
Some are not.
Some are, some are not. But we're trying to use more clinical based treatments.
Sure.
And so, so sex addiction has sort of a connotation that you have to look a certain way sexually, like basically vanilla sex, in order to be good sexually, like that's what's okay. Whereas what we kind of see is that you can explore your sexuality in a wide variety of ways. You can be kink. It depends on if you're consenting with adults. And so the way we frame it is hypersexual problematic behavior rather than sex addiction. And it's hard to say, like, can you really be addicted to something that's not a chemical too? You know, I know that the people always talk about behavioral addictions like gambling addiction and video game addiction and sex addiction, but it's hard to really quantify that. Like, is it possible to really have an addiction to a behavior? But at the same time, I mean, there's clearly people who are engaging in very problematic behaviors that need help for this issue. Mm-hmm. And so that's the debate, and it's just on like what the word is. But the truth is, it's people who are essentially having a lot of sex, and they're not always having consensual sex, meaning they may be having consensual sex with that partner, but their partner that they have currently, like their husband or their wife, doesn't know about it. Or sometimes they do. And so that's when it becomes a problem, is that it's...
Is when their partner finds out.
Is when their partner finds out, oh my God, that you've been having sex with 10, 20, 30, 50 people without my knowledge. You've put me at risk for STDs or unknown pregnancies. You know, you never know.
Anything can be a compulsion if you like it.
I think that's
more... If it feels good.
Yeah.
If it feels good to get my back rubbed.
Yeah.
Guess what? I could... If I got my back rubbed every day for a month, and then on the first day of the next month, nobody rubbed my back, I would be aching for a back rubbing because it feels good.
Yeah.
So I can see there being some sort of compulsion. I don't know. Well, maybe some people have more, they're easier to fall into like addiction and sex addiction.
I do. I think some people have sort of addictive behaviors. Like they'll have a compulsion for a video game 1 month or 1 year, and then the next year it's sex. And let's be honest. I mean, sex still comes with that euphoric feeling, you know, the orgasm. So, it's I mean, there is a chemical component to sex that is happening.
You naturally release endorphins and other things that make you feel good when you have that feeling after sex of feeling calmed down. That's because you just pretty much had an injection of morphine because that's what endorphin is. That's what an endorphin is.
But where there's the problem is that, okay, so like your usual guy, typical guy will masturbate to porn. Hey, yeah. Introduce my husband, Josh. Most guys will masturbate to porn. Like that's like a pretty typical thing. When it's kind of on that borderline sex addiction compulsive behavior is, okay, maybe they're masturbating to porn, but then they start going on Craigslist and talking to people, and then they start doing cyber sex, and then they start doing meeting people, and it kind of like builds from there. If their partner knew that they were talking with somebody on Craigslist, I don't think they'd be okay with that.
But where does it become a sex addiction in that instance versus just infidelity?
Well, it's when it's like a chronic thing. It's not like this happened just once.
So they're just always a cheater.
It's complicated,
reality.
Really.
Yeah, is that some people don't believe it's a real addiction because of that.
You're just a cheater.
Like when Tiger Woods famously cheated on his wife, he said he was a sex addict and that he was seeking help for it. Really? Just a cop out.
It's hard. I think it's hard with that position, too, because the more famous you are, I mean, think of how many women probably fall at his feet. I mean, not to say that it's okay to cheat on your wife just because you're famous, but I could imagine it being very difficult to have a lot of beautiful women wanting
you
and wanting your money and wanting to have sex with you and willing to do pretty much anything to, I mean, what? Oh, no, don't give me a blowjob.
Oh, no, I would never want that.
I would never.
Well, since you're down there.
It's hard.
You're
That's
already on your
thing.
Knees. We might as well.
But
I couldn't just leave her there.
I've had clients who, like when they were dealing, why they would call themselves sex addicts is because throughout their marriages, they couldn't like stop themselves. Like where there's
your typical guy says,
yeah, they feel like it's out of control. Like typical guy will watch porn, masturbate, be done. Mm-hmm. They felt like, no, they had to take it to the next level. They kind of always needed to move to that next step. How do I make this bigger? How do I make this more intense? Mm-hmm. And they somehow justified like going on Craigslist as, no, this is just another version of masturbating. I'm just masturbating with a person now. But it's like, I don't think your partner would be okay with that. Or like they'll go to the strip club.
A lot of them end up cheating. Altogether. Yeah. They don't just do cyber sex. They straight up cheat.
They go down a path and they are just on it. Or like they're go on to a strip journey. Clubs.
They're on a quest.
And like
for the Holy Grail.
Some partners are perfectly fine with you going to a strip club. It's a part of their lives, but other people ain't happening are not. Here. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. Pros and cons. I think burlesque shows would be fine.
I haven't been in like a week.
That's totally. And I rarely
go to the champagne room. Rarely.
Well, but that's where it might go to the iffy place. Is that they may go to the strip club. That's the part that's okay. But they just don't say no to the champagne room, and then they're always in the champagne room trying to get to.
What happens in the champagne room?
Well, some versions of prostitution sometimes. It depends on the strip club. It is illegal.
The legit strip clubs won't let it happen.
Well, I mean,
the really.
What I've heard is that
strip clubs are legit.
In many strip clubs I've heard there are always options out there, but I've not been to every strip club. So, you know, I can't say that is true for every place without having gone to one.
A lot of women who do sell for prostitution, they also work as strippers because it's a great place to market yourself.
Well, yeah, it's all about marketing. It's all about networking.
It's all about marketing. You have to get your product out there for people to see.
So people need to know who you are, what you do.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know. Maybe a strip club would be a safer way to do that sometimes because then there's at least a bouncer there. So if it goes too far, in a similar way of having a pimp, you kind of have somebody who can like protect you. I don't know.
That's why it's better to have what they have
in Vegas Nevada.
Because it's legal prostitution. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you want, you can go to a place that is... They have to deal with the health department and make sure all their ladies are clean. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to worry about the street violence when they're doing prostitution.
Yeah, because they're safe. And actually, a lot of times, I think they're videoing it, too, to be not like putting it on the internet, but for security, security reasons. Cameras.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just very silly the way, like, prostitution has been around for, like, hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah.
Like, humans have been doing it forever. Like, it started long ago when we... When a lady saw a guy eating, you know, he had just killed a woolly mammoth, and she was like, "Hey, can I have a piece?" I'm like, "Can I have a piece?"
A piece for a piece,
yeah,
dear.
I'll give you a piece, yeah. Although humans were never alive at the same time as woolly mammoths, I just want to make sure people understand that.
Just a little historical marker there. Well, but that's one. Like, there are some sex addicts who would say that, you know, like that's an area where they struggle too, is with spending money. Like, they don't feel like they can. Stop that. So they will pay for these hookers and they'll end up spending thousands upon thousands of dollars. So it's not just the sexual action.
How much are hookers?
Well, you can spend, from what I heard on Pretty Woman, it could be $300.
I think that's outdated right there.
It's outdated, so maybe it's maybe it's raised with inflation. I don't know.
Oh, it definitely gets inflated down there.
But, you know, that's an issue with sex addiction, too, inflation? Is it's hard for me to call somebody a sex addict if they're in a sexless marriage. Because what degree are they using sex outside of the marriage to kind of deal with that need?
Well, I mean, Do people not understand that you have needs, and if they're not met, you're gonna not stick around. Either somebody's just gonna leave.
People will have sexless marriages and still expect their partners to be faithful. And
how is that? Why? Because you're not having sex with them. Who are they being faithful to?
I don't know. It exists. It's very real. But so anyhow, sex addiction is pretty complicated, and all I know is that it's helpful to get. It's if you are experiencing sex addiction and you feel out of control, that's the big thing. If you feel out of control, go get help. Go see a therapist.
Maybe go down to St. Louis Marriage Therapy with Angela Skirtu. You could always give her a call at 314-973-7997.
Or you can visit my website at www.therapistinst.louis.com.
And I think that's a good point to end it for tonight. We went a little bit long, but I think that was a great show.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
This is Josh.
And Angela. Out.